Hello, grandkids, and welcome to a very special edition of Stunt Granny. It is number 777. That is a ludicrous number to be spitting out of my mouth currently. This is Kevin DeFranco. On the other end of the microphone from me is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
That'll have come luck, Kevin. How about yourself?
It is busy as all get out at the job currently. It seems very busy in wrestling right now. You know, I've got to say that the last couple of weeks here with the Vince McMahon ouster has given me a much needed podcast pep in my step, to be quite honest with you. So,
no, I agree. Things have gotten really interesting. Yes, it does feel very fresh.
And okay,
feels like there's a lot to talk about. Yes,
and that's on Friday. Well, I did not watch SmackDown on Friday. I was watching other things on Friday, but I did tape SmackDown and watch all of it. When on Sunday night, when I was watching the main event, Gunther versus Shinsuke Nakamura for the Intercontinental Championship, that was the most invested I have seen a WWE crowd in an extremely long amount of time. I'm not sure how many times I thought to myself, are they piping in this this noise? Because I wouldn't see crowds in the background move at all. Like, it didn't even almost look like they were clapping sometimes when you heard clapping over audio.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm like, I was not questioning the TV reaction of the crowd on Friday, especially during that match. Like, I'm like, these people are really going bonkers for this match. And I think that that also kind of carried over to Raw this week, too. Like, am I imagining the crowd being more into it, or do you think that that's something that has been there?
No, I think crowds have really come back alive in the last few weeks. Yes. No, so you're not crazy, and I know you're not crazy about seeing the motionless crowds while there's plenty of noise going on. Either no, there was a lot of audio sweeping going on.
Yeah, and it. Yeah, it is nice. Like, it, like, that's one thing that Jeremy and I definitely set out on our quibbles with AEW's booking on a frequent basis. But their crowd reactions, I never question them at all. Like, they always seem genuine.
Oh, yes. People go to an AEW show to have a good time. To will this so-so match to be a good match to be a great match, and a great match to be legendary. They are there to be the sixth man, or however crazy you want to say it. It is, you know,
yeah, whichever sport you apply that number.
Yeah. Right. Yes. AEW crowds. Are there to support the AEW brand. WWE crowds have been, by and large, for most of the time they've been on the road, just dead. And sometimes you can understand what the quality of the shows they're given. Other times, it's like, these people did not come here to make any noise at all. It is the strangest thing. I could not imagine going to a live show and not making any noise at all. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it's really part of the gig, you know, going to a live event. I don't think I'm the most vocal person, anymore. I do, kind of love antagonizing the people around me just for the sake of it. And, maybe rooting for not the crowd favorite just to get a reaction.
Yeah.
If anything else, but, yeah, like, yeah, like Vince could have had Gunther versus Shinsuke in a match. I'm not sure that it would have gotten that reaction. Like I really think that this, I mean, a lot of the fans have to be at least somewhat in our boat, right, about still kind of tolerating the product because there was still good aspects to the WWE.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it sorely needed a new voice in there to freshen things up. And whether it's, I mean, I guess it never seemed like it'd be anyone but Triple H at this point. Like, did you ever get the feeling that it might be someone else to replace Vince?
Well, it was either going to be Triple H or Vince planned to live forever.
yeah, so... You know, I guess you kind of saw the model that Triple H had, at least somewhat. He does have some different tools, though, on the main roster and really being in charge of everything. Yeah, he's already started to do some fairly mild roster reshaping. And, yeah, it makes sense to bring a few people back. How many times have we mentioned how shorthanded the WWE feels since the all of these cuts really kind of sunk in?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's been, I mean, just look at that, if you can. Just look back at the Men's Royal Rumble. God, that was awful. That was just some of the worst collection of talent I think I've ever seen in a match like that. It's been rough. And the way that they got SmackDown anyway during the draft while continuing to let people go, it's been rough. And yes, they're bringing, Triple H is bringing people back, and he's bringing back some of his favorite. And, you know, so the number of people, the jury's still certainly out on it. Like Cross, or Loomis, or Hit Row. Hit Row without Swerve. That's gonna be a hell of a journey to see what Hit Row can be without Swerve.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good next big topic, I suppose. Though it is Hit Row, like that was one where because I did not watch it on Friday, I got the news on my phone sometime Saturday that they had debuted, and I'm just like, huh. I was like, well, isn't that something? I like them as a three-piece unit still. From what I remember about B-Fab's wrestling, it needed some improvement. I'm not sure if she's done some training and or wrestling in the meantime. But... Yeah, Top Dolla and Ashanti the Adonis seemed more suited for a tag team, and that is definitely a mild roster reshaping that could help some people with visibility. Like, I do think that Triple H will tag team wrestling is never going to be the priority in the WWE. I do think that the tag team division is going to look at least a little bit better moving forward, though.
Yeah.
And this is one of those, to me, this is an addition. It's just like, yeah, you kind of, you need some teams like this. Like, I'm not sure how much they're going to win necessarily. Like, because it almost seems like a weird spot with the Usos being the champions right now, and having another heel faction challenge them is kind of an odd situation. But it has been done.
I was under the impression that Hit Row are baby faces.
Oh, okay.
They were always supposed to be baby faces, but whatever. But again. They need to bring some people back. The cupboards were bare, and unfortunately for them, you know, Swerve's not available to come back to be part of this. No, gotta call back who they can call back who never signed with AEW, or who doesn't have any kind of a valid contract anywhere else. so. This is what we're getting, and it's fine. It's good. I mean, once again, some of these folks, never got to show what they could do, and now they're at least gonna get that chance.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that if Swerve were around, they'd really be slotted any different. Honestly, like, he was still kind of going to be the main attraction in that group, I think.
Yes.
It could be interesting. I mean, they could make B-Fab more integral to the whole thing. So, but we'll, I mean, that's something that'll play out as things move forward. But I do think that Top Dolla and Ashanti make a very good tag team that, yeah, again, like, we've talked about New Day being around for forever and the Usos being around forever. Like, they could use some fresh opponents to go against, and these guys definitely fit the bill.
Oh, yeah.
So, that was a fun SmackDown return. And I guess if we want to kind of keep on the tag team thing, I suppose Maximum Male Models is going to end up being a tag team moving forward, along with maybe Los Lotharios again popping up on the old tag team radar.
Well, Los Lotharios are certainly, they're basically there to do jobs. I don't see them getting pushed anytime soon. Maximum Male Models was a creation of the previous creative regime, and that creative regime for a week or two decided that they didn't like Max Dupri, aka LA Knight. But he's been brought back into the faction. So now this faction has two managers. Although I know she can, I know Maxine Dupri can work at least a little bit. She was an early call. That she was also an early call up from NXT as well. So it's again not someone who's got the most experience if they're going to put her in the ring at all. They're definitely set up to be a heel act. Not on last week's show at all, really, from what I remember.
They had Los Lotharios were trying to entice Maxine over to their side.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just a little skit there. It's a nice undercard tag team feud. And, again, it's something that... Yeah. To me, as a general whole, you need stuff like that to establish the tag team division as a whole, and it really hadn't been there. Like it's probably not going to be like my top priority ever, but it is something that needs to be done, and it seems to be being dealt with currently by Triple H. So good on him.
Yes.
What else? Well. Do you think Ricochet is maybe in line for an actual sustained push under the new regime here?
Honestly, it's too late for that one. There's nothing there. You just been beat down too much. The last creative regime even tried a little bit putting the Intercontinental title on him. Granted, it wasn't a great reign or anything, but and then ended, basically being squashed by Gunther. There's nothing to, there's not there was anything to Ricochet. I mean, there's plenty of guys who can do a lot of the same stuff he can do athletically. He'll never be a strong promo. He's not a bursting with charisma. Yeah, I don't see much happening with him. Whatever window there was there, it's been closed for a while.
Yeah, it was just because he actually got a promo, it made me wonder about it.
I mean, they can try. I'll be damned if I'm gonna care.
Yeah, he has. If they dig him out of this hole, it will be impressive. Like it's been pretty tough. For Ricochet, and I don't even know if that promo was particular. Like, I guess he's moved from completely awful to like okay-ish in my book. But that's still not gonna get you far enough in the WWE. So. Yeah, that's, that was one. Anything else here on, no, not a whole lot. I mean, I guess, is there anything really in general, I suppose, if we're talking tag teams, about this women's tag team tournament. Is there anything in general, since it's kind of spanned a couple of shows here? Do you have any thoughts on it?
It seems like it's being set up for Dakota and Io to win the whole thing. And pretty handily. That SmackDown side of the bracket is just god-awful. I mean, The finals might as well be the next week's match with Io and Dakota versus Alexa and Asuka. Why do we even have to go through the motions of these SmackDown matches at all? and why are we putting Zoe Stark and Nikita together and throwing them on SmackDown? It makes no sense at all.
That to me is, hey, we're gonna test you out on the main roster. I don't mind. I guess I don't really mind that one. It is a weird combo, but I also think that they're like, hey, these are the two most ready to go to the main roster. Let's see them in a main roster tag match here.
I don't think Nikita is in any way ready to go to the main roster, and I just will never like Zoe Stark in any way, shape, or form. Although I guess technically she's probably close to ready. Once again, I'll be damned if I'll care. But But not yet. But yeah, no. I mean, this thing is being set up for EO and Dakota to win the whole thing. So then that act with them and Bailey can be on both shows. So they can also be a boon to SmackDown as well.
Yeah, and it would certainly make a fair bit of sense if rumors be true, EO and Dakota taking on possibly returning Naomi and Sasha would make a great deal of feud sense.
Yes, that would be some great stuff right there. Definitely could really use that. Because I'm fairly certain they're going to put Sasha and Naomi on down. And if the Women's Tag Team Champions can travel through both brands, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. With them not being... Like, that's got to loom over this whole tournament, honestly. Just because there have been already a number of comebacks. It only seems logical that the Sasha Naomi thing is. I mean, there hasn't been word one way or the other. You would think, though, that things have been smoothed over since then, and that their problem was more with Vince than with anyone in charge now.
No, it's again. According to some people, the deal's already done. According to other people, it's still not done, but likely. Yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if at this point that we didn't see them back in the next month or two.
Yeah. They really kind of. Well, yeah. Dakota and EO getting the belts is probably the best play. You get two very good wrestlers with the tag team championships, which is going to be hard to argue with. And always good to have heel champions. That definitely helps out a lot. And yeah, like I said, that's just other. Yeah, other positive stuff that they bring to the table, and it gives a new faction some life, because yeah, I'm not sure. I guess Bailey could end Bianca's streak here. Like, I think Bianca's in kind of safe territory to drop the championship at this point.
Yeah, I definitely see Bailey taking the title in the coming months. Yes, I don't necessarily see Bianca getting it back, because I think they'll move on to Becky and Bailey, which a feud that has never actually happened on the main roster, if you could believe that. It's the one horsewoman versus horsewoman match that has not been done to death.
I guess I'm not completely surprised by that. I feel like Becky was mainly Raw and Bailey was mainly SmackDown.
Not really. I think they were actually both on Raw a lot of the time. Or actually, I think Becky was on SmackDown. You know what? Becky was on SmackDown most of the time. 2016 to 2018-19, yes. Bailey was on Raw during that whole time, yes.
Okay.
And then they switched.
Yeah.
In the period before. Yeah, so they barely interacted on the main roster. Really didn't have a feud in NXT because they were, you know, never fully. They did some, but we're talking 7 years ago now.
Right.
Yeah, no. I could see Bianca ending up on SmackDown, actually, after the draft. She's never wrestled Ronda. Her and Charlotte had a couple of matches on Raw, but those matches never had a finish. There's stuff for Bianca to do over on SmackDown if they wanted to go in that direction.
That is an interesting one that I haven't really thought a whole lot about, honestly. Yeah, there are a lot of fresh feuds for her over there, though, for Bianca on SmackDown. I'm trying to think. I guess they did usually do the draft kind of late in the year here, didn't they? Did they do that last year?
Yeah, it's usually October. Yeah, it's been October since the switch to SmackDown on Fox.
Okay. Yeah, so that very well could happen. I suppose that'll be interesting to keep an eye on. And it's kind of fun. I don't even think I weighed in. Yeah, that women's tag team tournament is just, that's one where it's a little too separated for my own. It almost feels like they should do it on less number of shows. I feel like they're slow rolling it like one match a week, and it almost feels too slow to me. What did you think? I may or may not have gotten a few texts about it. What did you think about? What's their names? Judgment Day's promo to start off Raw.
I don't think they said enough for me to have a kind of an emotional reaction about it, but I assume our other co-host Jeremy Mays may have had stronger opinions.
He really liked the Damian Priest aspect of it.
Priest is coming out. Yeah, Priest is coming off well. Yeah, Priest is making this work. You know, Rhea's Rhea. Finn's the one who I don't think fits.
He still seems like an odd addition to this whole thing.
I was in the beginning stages of watching New Japan during his last maybe year or so, in 6 months to a year or so in New Japan as the leader of the Bullet Club. But since then, I have not really bought him as a heel. Especially as an undersized heel, who doesn't necessarily wrestle like an undersized heel. He still does all of his same flashy moves.
He does not really change his move set when he changes characters.
People have made similar complaints about Seth in the past, but I think this in this latest incarnation of Seth freaking Rollins, he's definitely shown he's learned how to still do some big moves during the course of matches, but he's also a little more cerebral, a little more methodical in his movements. And diabolical as a heel.
And he's been more grounded, I think, too.
Yeah, I think he has. He has. Finn, on the other hand, during that weird run in NXT where he was a heel, but he kind of wasn't a heel, in between. He had some really good matches during that time period. I won't say he didn't, but from a character standpoint, I wasn't really buying it. And from a character standpoint, I guess I'm not really buying into him in the Judgment Day.
He's still kind of sticking out a bit like a sore thumb in that group. He doesn't seem to be meshing with them in a positive way at all. Rhea's just kind of. Her gimmick already kind of suited the Judgment Day anyway. So it's just kind of, a slightly modified version of what she was doing. And I think that almost the same thing can be said for Damian Priest, honestly, where it was just a little bit of a tweak to his existing character. And Finn, yeah, I really loved him in his original NXT run. I thought he got some momentum back with the second NXT run. But he's never really developed a character on the main roster, I don't think. It was one of those ones where I like the Vince. Obviously, he had the hot start with the extremely hot start with the Universal title win. But I mean, how many years has it been since then at this point? 4 years?
It's been six.
Six? Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, that is a long stretch of time to not have a character. Like, maybe that time period in NXT, the NXT 2.0 run. Like, I do feel like he had this I'm trying to get my mojo back kind of character going on there. And it worked for him. Obviously, if you get your mojo back and then you go to the main roster, you've got to phase into another part. And yeah, nothing's really happened for him since then.
Not really. He had that embarrassing, really, nothing, no fault of his own, but that embarrassing finish to his one match with, to his match with Roman Reigns as the Demon. That pretty much
Oh.
marked the end of the Demon as anything they can do. And you know what? I think that had run its course, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah, as much as I
But
liked it,
since
it was
then,
done.
he's. Yeah, but since then he's found, he's found nothing really to sink his teeth into. They're trying with just the Judgment Day stuff, but it's not a, it was never the best. Even when Edge was a part of it was never the best thought out thing to do. It had a lot of logicals for me about, Edge's motivations and everyone, clearly Edge's motivations, and then still their motivations of what their mission statement is still unclear. They try to do the there's no leader of this group, but there
It,
kind of does have to be one
and that's the
to make
biggest
these things work.
thing, I think, to me hurting Finn is that, you knock out Edge because you're bringing in Finn, and you just go, oh, okay, well, then this guy is the new leader, right? And I know that he's been finishing the promos, but he doesn't feel like the leader in the least bit.
No, he doesn't. No, really, based on their positioning with Rhea being centered, she feels more like a leadership role. But then, Priest is coming into his own, especially on the microphone in this in this gimmick.
Yeah.
Just they're doing a really good job hyping his match up with Edge for next week's show. So certainly looking forward to that. Then, but then where they go from there? Dominic Mysterio joins the group. Yay.
yeah, that is not
Well,
I hope
once
that
again,
story is nixed.
why would they want him? Why would they want him? Why would anybody want him? Why would Ray even want
Yeah, he has not done anything really positive in the ring in quite some time. Like, even if you take
No,
out the
he's
whole
still.
personal, I don't think he's good in the ring part. Like, they've had him do nothing but lose recently.
He's done nothing but lose. He's got a terrible body. He's got terrible physique. He's got a terrible haircut. There's just nothing about this. Like just the ultimate nepotism hire and promotion, basically. It's just. Yeah, he probably did. Now there was a storyline, you know, reason dictating him having the early run that he did with the feud with Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy and all that.
Yeah.
But from there, there's just been nothing, and then he could get away with doing the aerial spots. He could do well and be carried by two much, 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 much better wrestlers. From there, he has, you know, varying quality of wrestlers to work with somebody who's so green. You could tell he still has some weird hesitations. He hits the ropes differently. He takes turnbuckles weird. Remember last week and probably the week after, he was not fully trained when they threw him in there, when they threw him in the ring, and only because of the, you know, Seth Rollins being who he is,
no,
did that work. He doesn't have his basics down. He moves weird. He finds himself out of position a lot of the time. You know, he really did, once again, after that initial storyline ran its course, he probably should have gone to NXT.
Well, and you would have thought that the whole tag team thing was a good spot to put him in, and I don't really remember him being an anchor in that team. Obviously, he's not as good as his father.
Right.
But, you know, it was sometime after that tag team run, and I mean, this is another one where, I mean, I feel bad for Ray, and I feel, in some ways, I feel bad for Dominic. Like, they have had this looming, we're gonna break you guys up storyline going for, I mean, it feels like it's been a year now. I know that it probably has.
Oh, it's definitely been a year. It's probably been more than a year.
Yeah.
Because I remember when they wrestled the Usos at SummerSlam last year, you know, and they lost, and feeling like, okay, the turn is happening now. Yes, it's been a year of these miscommunications and Dominic being kind of a jealous jerk about to his dad, and it never goes anywhere. So he's this. So he's on top of everything else that's wrong with him. He's kind of a dick. He's an unlikable babyface.
Ray and him have not. They have not been given any storyline love at all. You know, like, they've been in storylines, but it's all been such a train wreck. Because even this stuff with Judgment Day just, in some ways, seemed like it came out of the blue and then also seemingly ended out of the blue. Because, like, the babyfaces never got any retribution at all.
With the Mysterios?
Oh.
The Mysterios?
Oh, did they win the match?
SummerSlam.
Oh.
Yeah, they won the match at SummerSlam because Edge got involved. And then continued because, once again, we are building towards, obviously building toward Dominic turning on his father and joining them. But that's not part of the problem with the Judgment Day. We went all that time where they weren't being featured on TV because the night that they formed the new trio, Rhea got injured, so they pulled them off TV for like a month. Then they started this thing with the Mysterios, and then Edge came back, and we've been doing this. But it's been an inconsistent push for the Judgment Day. They've, you know, lost a couple of matches. They've lost matches along the way. I don't necessarily see Priest beating Edge in Toronto.
I would be pretty shocked if that happened.
Yeah, and at least this regime, I think that they'll understand that how big of a deal it is that Edge is wrestling Toronto for the first time in over a decade.
And the fact that I'm assuming that there is not a whole lot of more times that they will be in Toronto, although that continues to be one of those things that I do seemingly have loved about the new WWE travel schedule that, again, admittedly started a while ago. I don't feel like obviously there have been pandemic-related reasons why there hasn't been a show north of there, north of the border here. But I do feel like it kind of been a really long time even before that it felt like the international shows were more common than the Canada shows. You know, like the Saudi Arabias and the UKs and kind of, because they did at least one Japanese show, didn't they? I feel like Brock Lesnar was on it at some point.
Yeah. They did that. Yes, they did that a while back. Yes.
But those run off my memory. The last time the WWE, and I'm sure that they will. Have they said anything other than the fact that it's been Edge's 10 years? Like, have they mentioned how long it's been since they have been in Toronto?
I mean, they did a house show earlier this year. When they can finally get back into Canada. And, well, off the top of my head, and I don't know how this sticks in my head like this, Survivor Series 2016 and SummerSlam 2019 were in Toronto.
Oh, okay. Major shows do kind of come around rarely to just about anywhere, but I mean 2019 I guess isn't that long ago considering the restrictions, I suppose.
Right.
I am looking forward to that though. It'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward there. Other things on Raw to talk about. Just the general, there were quite a number of quality matches on Raw this week.
Oh, yes, there were. This was a very, very strong Raw until the ending. We'll get to that, but yes, the very strong matches. First of all, a strong match that started with one of the strongest promo exchanges we've seen in a very, very long time with Drew McIntyre and Kevin Owens. You could feel that this was not a heavily scripted promo battle between these two. They felt this. They felt that stuff what they were saying in their arc, and it made for some really, really great television.
It's nice to get other people have notably gone back to their quote unquote old characters. Serious Kevin Owens has not been cited for quite a good amount of time. And he's definitely a guy that I think he's been out of the main event scene, the actual main event scene, long enough that he's considered a breath of fresh air there. He main evented at WrestleMania. So, I mean, like, I, I'm... trying not to dance around that, but it's also like he hasn't really been after the main championships in a serious capacity in a few years now.
Yeah, no. He mentioned he hasn't held the title of any kind in the last 5 years, which that blew my mind. I could have sworn he's been Intercontinental U.S. champion more recent than that. I mean, he has a babyface. He had his run. He had his run against Roman. That was some really good stuff there as well. During the pandemic era.
It's almost hard to believe that he wasn't a tag team champion during this era at some point with Seth or someone that he's randomly tag teamed with. Honestly.
That one blew my mind too. I could have sworn him and Seth had a tag team title reign in there somewhere, but I guess not. They never would have had the chance to. The Usos have a champion for over a year.
The last year things have been pretty locked down in that department.
Yeah. So no. Yeah. No. It's pretty wild that Kevin Owens hasn't had a championship. And he certainly made his case to get a hold of one. The promo exchange was fantastic. They're really, really playing into this Drew McIntyre, going in on Roman Reigns for being a part-time champion and saying he's going to rescue the title. Essentially the same things that Roman Reigns, babyface Roman Reigns, would have said about Brock Lesnar.
Oh. Yeah,
it's really setting up Drew for failure if he doesn't do it.
Yeah, I feel like this has been a consistent WWE storyline ever since the more work shoot variety, John Cena versus The Rock. I feel like this part-timer versus full-timer story has kicked up at least once a year since then.
Yeah.
And honestly, I always think back to that one. It is a bit of the template. And it does help a lot that Drew McIntyre does hold a, is it actually two clean wins over Brock Lesnar?
Only one.
Just the one, okay.
It's just the one that's in 5 minutes in a warehouse, yes.
But still, as long as it gives him the storyline leverage, that's all that matters in wrestling.
I just feel so bad for that. I've always felt bad for that guy, having that run that he did under those circumstances. He did as good a job as anyone could have done, but it's still just not something that people look back on fondly. I don't know if they ever will, and it's just it really tarnishes his legacy until he gets that run in front of crowds.
And I think he's another guy. Speaking of crowd reactions, I think he's doing just fine for himself.
And, he's absolutely being reacted to like a star everywhere he goes, yes.
Yes, so I feel like, to me, with him, it's one of those, I feel like that run's going to happen. It's going to be interesting to see when they give him that run.
Yeah, but yeah, they're setting him up. They are setting him up to give Roman Reigns as good of a run as anyone's gotten, as good of a chance as anyone's had to beat Roman Reigns. If it doesn't happen here, it ain't happening until WrestleMania.
This is the last chance that Roman Reigns loses that championship until WrestleMania. I I guess I believe I'm still somewhat fairly on record of saying, you know, it seems like that spot was destined for Cody Rhodes. I would not be shocked if they pull the trigger on Drew McIntyre. They still, and it's still, what, do we still have three more shows to go until the Clash at the Castle?
I think 2 weeks. One Raw, one SmackDown each, yes. Two Raws, two SmackDowns, yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, there isn't a lot left here. It seemed like the Karrion Kross attack last week might have led to a three-way match. To me, that certainly has not been implied.
They never said that was what they were going to do or anything. It was a weird placement for it in the middle of this build when you just could have had Cross come back, you know, afterward. and be inserted into something bigger, but once again, on the record, I would never have put Cross in the spot as soon as he came back. But I digress. It's looking like the match is going to stay one-on-one. It's going to stay for both titles. They better have a hell of a reason for Drew, hell of an excuse for Drew not winning this match if he's going to lose.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I mean, they have two ready-made reasons in the Usos. For excuses. I'm not sure that it'll happen, but it could happen. I mean, they have definitely been deployed to great use in the past here, so it would not be completely shocking to see it happen again. But yeah, I mean, they really... Drew seems to be in as good a position as anyone has been to challenge Roman Reigns here. Like, this is the first time in quite some time that I'm going to actually feel tension at the match, that the change might... Well, I guess... Yeah, I guess I was never quite sold on Brock being the guy to beat Roman Reigns here. The possibility is always there because Brock is Brock. But for the most part, I kind of felt like that was Roman's match to win. But yeah, this one I really kind of feel on the fence about. Like you said, like Drew kind of deserves, or maybe not necessarily deserves, but he really needs that run with an actual crowd.
Yeah.
So, it would be pretty interesting to see him get that, at the Clash at the Castle here. One of the other, so that was, one of the really awesome matches there. Drew versus Kevin Owens. The other one that, definitely stood out to me, Bobby Lashley versus AJ Styles. Your thoughts on this U.S. Championship matchup?
Really, really good match. They continue to, rebuild the importance of the United States Championship, and doing it around Lashley is a great idea. A really strong, babyface versus babyface match. Sometimes not always the easiest thing to pull off, but they were able to do it. They were able to throw some shenanigans in with Miz and Ciampa coming down to the ring, and then the whole Dexter Lumis. Interruption. So it wasn't all just a straight, competitive, respectful wrestling match between two baby faces. But, you know, in the end, they had a really good match. Lashley wins clean. They keep having Lashley win clean.
Oh. Yeah,
so, no, nothing but good stuff there.
Yeah, there were definitely some shenanigans involved in that one, and that's fine. If you want to keep AJ Styles kind of, looking somewhat strong, in defeat, that's one way to throw some stuff his way to, he'll never use it as an excuse since he's, definitely, old, babyface, at this time, but he can dance around it at least and use it as somewhat of a foil moving forward. And I'm trying to think, was there another really good match?
No, there was not. But they made it a bit of the show with it anyway. I'd probably be a little too hard on it. But really, after a really good show and the two matches that preceded it, what the hell were they thinking ending the show with Dolph Ziggler versus Theory? this is like 2 or 3 weeks in a row of this, of a weird match, you know, going on last when the show has already peaked. By far, has already peaked.
Yeah, it was like, it was about 10 minutes into the match that it dawned on me that Dolph Ziggler versus Theory was the main event. And I'm just like, hold on, you're telling me that the U.S. Championship didn't highlight it, or Drew McIntyre, who is definitely in the main event at Clash of the Castle, and Kevin Owens, who at a minimum has been a main event utility player, even in the last 5 years, when he hasn't had a championship. It really did seem like a really weird placement for this matchup. And,
it's totally weird. Once again, they've main evented shows, not the biggest match you can do. Now, I know in the past they've experimented with front-loading the show and then maybe not making it the third hour a priority as Monday Night Football season gets going, and maybe they're setting up for that. Maybe Triple H is sending a message to USA that, you know what, we've got a good two-hour show here. We don't need this third hour. But it's just so weird. And in fact, it's been the hallmark of Triple H run Raws to have this match that's not really the highlight of the show. I mean, and look at next week's show. It is a no brainer that you build to that Edge entrance pop in Toronto. You put that match on. You put Edge's match on about 9:45, 10 o'clock Eastern. And then close with something else. Is that match going to have a chance in hell of having any heat?
Yeah, it would be a pretty poor choice to have Edge on anywhere other than the main event next week.
Yeah, but the way that the pattern has gone, they are almost intentionally tanking the third hour.
Yeah.
Now, it's different than what they did in the past, where they were just tanking these the in-between the top of the hour segments. And we're not getting as many throwaway segments at all. We're not getting that. Even in the third hour, I mean, you know, Dakota Kai being Dana Brooke served its purpose, and then that rolled into the main event, which I guess served a purpose. I guess they want to try to actually have Theory win his first match since Money in the Bank.
Oh.
But once again, I mean, technically the match was fine. But after the two matches that followed, it wasn't going to hold a candle, and it didn't.
Yeah,
the
just because there's a lot of stuff working against this match. Like, even if, as I think the podcast has said, as a general whole, these two are, Dolph Ziggler, even his Kent statedness is for the most part worn out its welcome here.
Well, yeah, because he graduated like 20 years ago. How long can you live off of that?
It just doesn't feel like a guy that should be in a main event, you know, right now. Like, in theory, you kind of get the reason why he's in the spot that he's in. But Dolph Ziggler, just like, I don't even feel like he's a good stepping stone for Theory at this point.
No, everyone's beating Dolph. It's not a big win. And then Theory is absolutely, you know, behind the eight ball here. I mean, all the matches he lost, all the beatings he took between Money in the Bank and SummerSlam, and most of that was Vince McMahon, who was the architect of his push, deciding that was the best way to, to present Theory after Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
Because look up until SummerSlam, they were running off of Vince's script still. Even if there was that one week lag before we started seeing, you know, Triple H's influence. And they followed through with Theory losing all those matches, getting beat up week after week, and getting nothing back. And then all they can do for not being on the show 2 weeks in a row. And then he just beat them. And then he gets to beat Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah.
Whoever gets to beat. It's not. Yeah. They got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
Once again, there was already a lot of doubt that Theory is this guy that, you know, Vince McMahon, Theory can never be what Vince McMahon foresaw for him. Well, the 4 weeks after Money in the Bank didn't help at all.
No, it if he had momentum, it really it got blunted in a hurry. So, yeah, congrats, Vince. You threw another guy under the bus before you left the situation. Kudos to you. One last, I like this guy for 5 seconds. Fuck this guy. Good gravy. If we see an end to that, I would be more than happy. Just random pushes ending would be a real love. Now, one thing that I did think, and I'm not necessarily sure that it needs to be a long talk, when I saw Veer Mahan versus Bo Keller, I'm like, oh, Triple H love the ye old squash match in NXT. Like, you definitely could not go a full week without at least one enhancement talent match. I am completely fine if this becomes a staple on Raw.
Yeah, but it is interesting that they've got both Veer and Omos essentially doing squashes and trying to do Unstoppable Monster. You can do it. I mean, it's not impossible. I mean, it's the 2016-2017 Braun Strowman playbook, and that was done pretty much to perfection. Veer is definitely someone who's certainly shown some potential. I could definitely see him being moved into a position to challenge Lashley for the U.S. title down the line. And I would pretty much enjoy that.
I would too. I guess the other we kind of mentioned Seth Rollins earlier. Did we talk at all about the returning Riddle yet.
No, I mean, it's not like Riddle was ever gone long enough to miss him, or that it was ever really a much of a noticeable thing. But no, it was a well done segment. You know, the guess what, I'm actually here, that always gets a reaction.
Oh.
You know, they had a good brawl. So yeah, you know, they made a calculated decision to pull that match from SummerSlam so that it could, you know, hold up. Yeah, it could be a tentpole match at Clash at the Castle. And no reason a Seth Rollins Riddle singles match won't at least be very good. So no, that's all fine.
Yeah. There isn't a whole lot to talk about there, but you know, yeah, it's a nice little reintroduction. I do think that maybe the feud in general was probably going to do it, but having him gone for a couple of weeks does a nice job of setting him up as a little more serious babyface moving forward. Obviously, he still had a 420 bro shirt on, so plenty of pot references are ready to be had in the new merch under the new regime. But I do think that he at least showed something of a serious side that was still missing during the whole RK-Bro thing for the most part. So, good for him. I do think that that's something that he needs for character longevity. Yeah. Anything else to talk about in the wrestling world? Like, did you want to talk about Rampage at all?
Didn't see it. Couldn't care less about it.
Yeah.
WWE's done that to themselves, pretty much. I mean, once again, they sucked me in with the Moxley Man's Warner match the week before, but then this week, nothing. There's nothing to it. So I'm like, you know what? I watch enough wrestling.
I don't blame you.
If you're gonna absolutely establish that this is a B show that is unnecessary to watch for my enjoyment of the main show, I'll gladly set it out. I've got other things to do. I've got other things to watch. So,
yeah, I did actually watch this one, but I do not blame you for sitting this one out when Orange Cassidy versus Aria Daivari is the main event. You are requesting people to skip the show.
Yeah.
I will definitely put it that way. It helps to have a fast forward button. Okay. Well, I think that does it for wrestling talk, beer talk for this show. This is a beverage that my brother-in-law, who happens to live in Dayton, it got me. He likes to order beer from all over the country. This is from Treehouse Brewing. That's in Charlton, Massachusetts. This one is called Mega Treat, and it's a double IPA, 8.7% alcohol. These guys know just how to murder a really good double IPA. This one is has candied orange, candied mango, and a blend of tropical starburst flavors. They make some very, very delicious beers. And if anyone out there wants to order a beer from not their state, I would put Treehouse roughly in my top two of beers to order from, you know, not your state. The other one that I would put on that list is, and why did I just blank on their name? Because I stopped at it Oh shit. And it's gonna kill me here that I completely blanked on it, and I need to look it up on Untappd. Three Floyds in Munster, Indiana, just outside of Chicago there. That is, yeah, those two breweries, I don't know what they exactly do. Everything that they produce seems to be above and beyond in the delicious department. So, yeah, this one, again, happens to be a Treehouse Brewing out of Massachusetts, the mega treat. So, yeah, that is the Bell Time beer from at DeFrango 11. On the other end was at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, though, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.